How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Josh Hutchinson, and I've got John Binkle with me here today, as usual. How you doing, John?
I'm good, man. I just want to slip this in before we actually talk about hockey, the thing we came here to talk about. How about them Cowboys?
Oh, God. You threw me off with that one. I mean,
you don't want to talk about
no.
it?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. I mean, the same as normal. Like, their season ended identically to the way it did last year, like, in a creepy way.
Yeah. You had to have seen that coming, though. Come on.
Coming down to the last possession of the game, poor clock management.
Yeah.
Poor decisions.
No, that was terrible. There's no way they should have not gone for it on fourth down with like a few minutes left. Like, they had to have known. McCarthy is awful at clock management. He's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was so much a McCarthy thing as it was. I mean, I think the two brutal interceptions by Dak were that completely changed the game. I don't know. Like, one of them was in the red zone. It's the same thing every year, man. I don't know. It's really hard being a Cowboys and a Leafs fan because they're essentially identical. Like, it's the same story every single year. Right. Tons of hype. And lots of talent, truly.
Yeah.
The potential to go to make a run, and then they just don't do it. They just don't show up. So it's very frustrating. But congratulations to your Eagles.
Even I have though no worries. Me to say my that. Team will fully vindicate your team in the in the upcoming round of the playoffs against the Mr. Irrelevant quarterback that you guys can defeat.
Man, the Eagles
so good.
The Eagles really look like they might do it again this year.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm a Birds fan, so I'm not going to get too excited until they win, and then I'll just go catatonic and not believe it. So,
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But I delightfully digress. Let's
how okay. So, how about that Vinny Trocheck shout out? Was that a surprise to you, or did you know about that before?
I am not the president of his unofficial fan club like Blake is, but I do love some Vinny Tro, man. I always have. Too. I love the way he plays. It's a really hard-nosed dude that just lives in the action on the ice. I love it. So to turn that episode on and, like, be so used to our intro music, right, and love the intro music, and it not be that, I was like, what's going on? And I'm sitting next to my wife, and she was just like, what? And I was like, oh, this is nuts. Like, what? What?
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. I wish I knew the name of the person that listens to the show that's buddies with Vinny that hooked us up with that. But yeah, that was pretty cool. So
it was. And thank you so much to whoever that was. Like, that seriously made my day, and Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey makes my day a lot, and it is at the top of the list in days made.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks again for leaving us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you haven't and you're enjoying our content, please just take a second, leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, check out the Apples and Genos Discord server. It's a great place to talk fantasy hockey, get your questions answered, and also receive alerts when new Apples and Genos content drops. So if you didn't already know, this is Midweek Moves. It's Wednesday, January 25th, and we're talking about schedule maximization for the rest of the week and who you should be adding and dropping. So for the rest of this week, there is one team in the league with three games between Thursday and Sunday, and that's the Boston Bruins. They have three games with one off night. So
I got to interject let's just, here.
Oh, yeah,
Boston.
Yeah.
Boston's schedule in those three games and the one game in the following early portion of the next week, Tampa, Florida, Carolina, and Toronto. So okay. Tough slate. Not exactly an easy run before time off.
For sure, for sure. And then Carolina and Toronto both have two games with two off nights to finish out this week. They're the only two teams with two off nights. So they're definitely ideal streaming candidates. And as we go into next week, Carolina I mean, it's a weird week here. I think you wanted to interject here again. I see you have a note here.
Oh yeah.
Before I jump into next week, but
so you go for it. Of this schedule to finish the week, the Islanders, Seattle, Ottawa, Columbus, Vegas, and Florida all have back-to-backs on Friday and Saturday before hopefully you have an ad drop to lead into the next week when you're going to have, you know, limited ads for a two-week period, basically. So perhaps go with your Friday, Saturday if you can fit these in. Boston being the only team to play Saturday and Sunday. So limited availability to double up on those days in the back half.
So next week is a weird week. So in Fantrax and in Yahoo, the league or next week is actually 2 weeks because of the All-Star break. So there are 3 days with games next week. That's Monday to Wednesday, and they're super late nights. Like there's barely any games being played. So a bunch of teams actually don't play at all next week. So Carolina has 2 games in that Monday to Wednesday stretch, and they have these 2 games with 2 off nights. So they're super ideal in terms of streaming, especially since you want to be saving ads next week because it's a 2 week week. Or scoring period, I guess, is a better way of saying it. So I think Carolina is definitely the team to be streaming from this weekend and next week, at least at the beginning. And then there are a few other teams with 1 game, and then most of the league has 0 until the teams come back from the All-Star break. So a bit of a weird week. So I would take a look at the schedule and try and maximize as best as you can there. Let me just take a look here. I think that's all I gotta say. Actually, Vancouver and the Rangers only have 1 game this week, and that's on Friday, and then they don't play for 10 days. So they don't play at the start of next week. They don't play at the end of this week. They don't play until after the All-Star break after this Friday. So if you have streamer level guys from Vancouver or New York, I would probably be dropping them.
Yeah,
at least after Friday.
And that game that they come back on at the end of that 10-day period is an absolutely packed Saturday slate. So going to be tough even then if they're like fringe level players on your roster.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of ads, I have a couple of names here. I kind of stole the 2 big Carolina name, so sorry. I mean, they're
pretty
that.
Obvious, yeah. And it's totally an about face from when patches came back too. Like it's just and right back into play.
Exactly. So I have Seth Jarvis, who is 25% rostered right now. He was getting power play 1 for a little bit, but when I looked at last game lines, it looks like he's been bumped for Stefan Nason again. So they're going with that top loaded power play of Aho, Svechnikov, Natchez, Burns, and then Nason as a net front guy. So he's been bumped to power play 2, but he is playing 5-on-5 with Sebastian Aho. So that's a big deal. That would be considered their first line, even though they were actually played the third most amount of 5v5 minutes the other night. Jordan Staal, Jordan Martinuk, and I believe Jesper Fast played a considerable amount of 5v5 minutes. I absolutely
considered Jordan Staal as the ad suggestion this week. Didn't go with it, but absolutely considered it.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's not a whole lot to say about his stats. He hasn't been particularly great lately, but just the deployment, that improved deployment is nice. And then this other guy, Teravainen, 55% rostered, so a little less available. He actually has 8 points in his last 9 games, so he's heating up again, and actually 6 in his last 6. So there, and he is also playing with Aho at 5v5, also on power play 2, which is unfortunate for him. I know he historically has eaten a lot on the power play, so unfortunate for him that he is not on power play 1, but they're both playing. Sebastian Aho has been the hottest Hurricane by far the last little while. He has 10 points in his last 7 games. So the fact that they're both playing with him 5-on-5 definitely bodes well for them. Those are probably the two best options there.
I absolutely agree. I'm completely in line with that. And the reason that I considered Jordan Staal for my suggestion is that schedule, like you mentioned, is just so strong. And they have reverted to the way things were going before Patches came back into that lineup. So, or rather came into that lineup, period. So I absolutely in line with both of those. Hopefully you can get Teravainen at 55%. It's, you know, almost as likely as not. And I think Jordan Staal is a safe bet to certainly eat some minutes in that time as well. I have been loosely watching this game against the Stars as it's gotten started through the first, and it seems to be continuing in that same fashion. So I think great suggestions there. For me, I'm going a little bit more general based on the schedule slate for the ads this week. So it's a little bit wider of a net. So for me, I'm going to focus on the Kraken and the Senators. So Eli Tolvanen, okay. Jordan Eberle, Jared McCann, Matty Beniers, and Oliver Bjorkstrand, or Ridly Gregg, Matthew Joseph, and Shane Pinto. And it's really dependent on what you need out of your scoring format and who's available on your waiver wire. I'm fully into picking up any of these back-to-back Friday and Saturday stream level players, and kind of for seemingly opposite reasons for these teams. In Seattle, they're scoring in droves. They're doing it up and down the lineup. You truly could convince me that any one of those five would be the best bet to tally points on a given night. The order I listed them in is my personal preference and bias. And like we've discussed before, I'm generally wrong about which one to put the chips on in Seattle. take that with a grain of salt. Go with your own personal bias about these players. But the team does score up and down the lineup. You got to keep in mind Burakovsky, Schultz, and Schwartz are all currently in various stages of injury. So as much as they spread it around, there's a little bit less to be spread to. I am more excited to go with Tolvin. I think Jordan Eberle is probably your best floor option to accumulate some stats. As for Ottawa, well, things are in big time flux there. Josh Norris, breaking my heart here, returns to season ending IR with the shoulder injury. He will have surgery. He's not going to play again. So the Senators lines are fully shaken up. Matthew Joseph has rejoined the team from IR, and Ridly Gregg has been called up from your boys in Belleville after a pretty impressive stretch for him. So three different line blends since Norris had his surgery announced and Joseph popped into the top line and second power play. Pinto has finally gotten back on the score sheet after a dismal stretch, and Gregg is centering DeBrincat and Giroux. So there's like pros to each one of these guys.
Yeah.
With the success of the team in expected goal for, in scoring chances for, in high danger chances for, and et cetera, I'm very much willing to pick them up for basically a risk-free back-to-back against Toronto and Montreal, because these guys are going to get ice time. They're going to get it in good situations. And I'm totally fine with putting them in your slots to give it a shot and see what happens. I do want to end this whole spiel with an honorable mention to Anton Lindell as a streaming option. He also is playing a back-to-back. This one's against LA and Boston at home. He's got 6 points in 6 games. He's scoring on the power play and the penalty kill. He's shooting 15% on 20 shots over that 6-game span. And he's got an average time of ice of 18 minutes. He hit 19-20 once and nearly 20 in an overtime game against Pittsburgh, where he was on the ice first with Barkov. And I think there's a lot to like. So to paraphrase Nate in his latest Truth article, it's equally important as the point stretch. Lindell's shot and chance generation numbers have improved alongside the extra ice time. The Panthers have to be willing to hold on to anything that works. He's betting on Lindell to hold on to his top line deployment for now. Lindell paced at 55 points as a rookie last season, mostly alongside Reinhardt. was a top 10 pick and impressed immediately in NHL. So I'm sold too, Nate. Plus, he should soon be considered for left wing eligibility as well. I think he's probably a little bit less likely to be available in your competitive leagues. But if he is, I think he jumps to the top of this crowd of names that I named.
Yeah, 100%. I picked him up in the five-hole league. So I definitely support that, a Lindell stream. And actually, in Fantrax, I believe he is left-wing eligible already. So hopefully that comes in Yahoo soon. I think you're right about Seattle, your assessment of Seattle. You can't really go wrong. Just choose who you're vibing, essentially, because it's kind of all over the place in terms of who's scoring on a nightly basis. But yeah, I think Jordan Eberle probably is the safest bet. Matty Beniers seems to score in bunches, so he probably has the highest ceiling, but he's also the least available. So yeah, I think if it was me, I would probably go for Jordan Eberle or Jared McCann. And then in terms of the Senators, I think, yeah, Ridly Greig, just in the situation that he's in playing with the DeBrincat, I think that definitely warrants at least a look. I actually saw him play in person just less than a week ago, last Friday. My wife surprised me with tickets. We went. I woke up from my night shift sleep and she was like, "Hey, we're going to the game tonight." I was like, "Oh, sweet. That's awesome." So we took our girls to their first hockey game, and
cool.
Alea had a lot of fun. She was obsessed with the mascot. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, he looked pretty good, I guess. I mean, they were playing the Marlies, so I was more focused on the Marlies for obvious reasons. But I think, Greig certainly has pedigree, certainly has, I mean, he's certainly highly touted, at least in that organization. So it's cool that he's getting an opportunity there. So I would be watching him closely for sure. So let's go into drops. So for me, there's a few teams that are not really playing a lot. Over the next little while, there's a few teams who only have two games through the next 2 week scoring period. So that's through the next scoring period, like I mentioned before. So a number of them have one game before the All-Star break and then only one after the break. And that's Boston, Buffalo, LA, St. Louis, Winnipeg, and Nashville. So these are probably teams that you want to be dropping streamer level players from. So I went with LA just because they have so many streamer level players and you've probably been streaming them in because they've had decent schedules of late. So Danault, Arvidsson, Sean Durzi, I think those are guys that you're probably wanting to drop at this point just because of schedule. So that's essentially all I have to say about that. It's not necessarily because they're playing poorly. In fact, most of them are playing pretty well. But yeah, I think LA just finally has a bad schedule for the next little bit. So I would probably be dropping players from there.
I am basically a mirror to your thought process here. My drops for this week, streamer level Jets in the exact same fashion, right? Not necessarily players that you're excited to drop, but the schedule just behooves you to do so. For me, the short list, Cole Perfetti, Blake Wheeler, and possibly Neil Pionk, depending on how your roster necessity would force you to keep him or not. Everyone mentioned there is a relatively good bet to be a decent points producer in somewhat limited deployment and production. But as you said, they only play twice over the upcoming two-week period. You are going to have half the drops that you would normally have in that time span. So you got to drop them and come back later. You just kind of have to.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of forced into that situation for next week. It's a very bizarre week, with a lot of disparity in terms of games played. So let's jump into some hot topics from around the league. Why don't you lead us through this, Binksy?
Absolutely. So this one is going to feel a little bit weird. Okay, Jonathan Huberdeau has been removed from ESPN's undroppable list.
Awesome.
32 points in 45 games played, only 9 of those goals in total, only 11 power play points. His shots through a career low 57%.
Oh,
shots
wow.
per 60, a career low 5.6. His IPP is matching a career low of 62. And his average time on ice in the last 10 games, only 16.24.
Yuck.
He is now on what's listed for them as their second line. Like, for everyone wondering what you're going to get out of Huberdeau the rest of the season, it's rough, man. It's rough. Like, I would refuse to name him as a droppable player, but the fact that ESPN even thinks that it's possible is a pretty big milestone for such an accomplished player at this point.
This guy is on pace to almost have half the points that he did last year. That's insane. I don't know what's going on with this guy. It's just not, it's like the combinations just aren't working out for him.
Yeah.
Like he's not finding his happy place. He's not finding his mojo. Could be a coach thing. Like I know that
I was wondering, like, yeah,
people are pretty upset with Daryl Sutter right now. And he has been pretty, I think people are getting pretty sick, at least on Twitter, are getting pretty sick of his whole deadpan asshole old man shtick.
They definitely are tired of it on the 32 Thoughts podcast for sure.
Yeah.
They both were remarking that, you know, sometimes you just got to be a little bit softer with your players in the media. Like he's a well-known good guy. He's a well-known great coach, but sometimes, you know, you got to loosen up the grip a little bit.
Totally. So it seems like maybe there's an element of that in there. So, but yeah, for the rest of season, like I don't see Sutter getting fired mid-season. I could see that happening if they miss the playoffs in the off season. But I don't know what to say about Huberdeau, honestly. Like I thought that he would have turned it around by now, but it seems like across the board, he's just not living up to what you would expect from him.
I think that's kind of it in a nutshell, right? It's just not what you would expect. Like the phrase Huberdeau has been removed from the undroppable list is not something any one of us would take an odds on to go into this season. Moving on in the other hot topics, as we alluded to, Max Pacioretty also returns to the IR after tearing his Achilles again. As you said in your must add, it says major implications for the Canes who were surging into five games with him in the lineup. Turbo and Jarvis once again in the top line, top minute players that have been playing like it. Moving nearby, Owen Power.
Man, can I just interject for a second? Just as an aside, should we start having a conversation about, like, there are two players that just came back from major injuries that, I mean, that came back early from major injuries and are right away, their season's over again after a few games back. That's pretty sketchy. Like
it does make me wonder about Duclair. It really does.
I don't know the ins and outs of that injury, but in terms of Pacioretty, historically Achilles injuries typically take a very long time to recover from. I can remember when Kevin Durant went down in the NBA Finals in 2019, he missed an entire season. So
and
when I
came
heard
back and hurt himself again, yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. So, that was the thing is he, I think he had a partial injury to his Achilles, rushed it back, and then tore his Achilles like after a few minutes. He did like a simple crossover. So it's a really delicate tendon when it's damaged. And it's very, I mean, it's integral to your leg, essentially. So I'm appalled that I could remember when he tore it in the summertime and they said 6 month timeline. I'm like, that seems really quick.
Right.
That seems like a quick recovery. Like I would have thought
and then he came back
done.
Well before that. So,
and I'm certain that I said that on the podcast. I'm like, I'm surprised he's going to play at all. And then when they said he was going to come back like potentially a month early, I was like, "Ooh, that's surprising." But I mean, I don't know, like, who am I to judge? And then he plays two or three games. Did you see the play?
Yeah, like, completely non-contact. Happened. He just kind of he just kind of stood up straight on the ice and then immediately put all his weight onto his left leg rather than the right leg. Yeah, it just
like,
I mean,
he clearly was not ready to come back.
Hitting a divot in the ice, and I'm like, okay, but you know, like players hit divots in the ice all the time, and it's something that'll put you off balance, not completely snap your Achilles. So it's
that just seems irresponsible to me. In terms of training staff, medical staff, and frankly, the player. Like, I know
especially it's considering we talked about this, you know, at length over the times that we discussed this, you know, with all of the talk about him coming back sooner than everyone expected each time it bumped up on the timeline. We talked about it over and over again. The Canes don't need him, right?
No.
Like, they want him. But they don't need
it. It would be nice
like,
to have
that'd be
him.
Great. Like, clearly they're a better team with him on the ice, as you would expect, but they don't need him at all. And they very well may have shot themselves in the Achilles on this one. Like, that was rough and disappointing. Like, you really feel for him in that case. Like,
I just don't know regardless why
of being too gung-ho, that sucked. It really sucked to see.
Yeah, it's super frustrating. I just think that like his career might be over, actually. Like that, like we're at that point with this guy, and the amount of major injuries that he's had, we might be looking at the last of Max Pacioretty. I don't know that for a fact, and I know he really loves playing hockey, but yeah, it's a shame, and I just think that there are a lot of people culpable in this situation, and it could have been avoided. It's just like for me that like I have very limited, like I work in a hospital, I see injuries, I have limited knowledge of the way that these things work, but the fact that when the injury first happened and I was like, that seems like a short timeline. That's a bit of a red flag, but like obviously every tear is different. Every broken bone is different. Every injury is different. Like, so who am I to judge? Like, I don't have intense knowledge. I'm not a doctor, but the fact that it was a red flag to me. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know. I doubt that that'll ever happen, but the fact that it was a red flag to me and I was like, it seems a little strange. And then sure enough, I was right. Like that's scary. That's kind of scary. Anyways, you can move on. Sorry. That was a long tangent.
No, I mean, I think it's fully applicable. Like it, when it happened, it really gave me pause on being like ready and reticent for Duclair to come back from an Achilles injury. You know, the landscape of the teams are very different. The injury is similar, right? And the timeline is relatively similar. So it's certainly scary. I'm right there in line with you. It to all of us felt too soon. We were all shocked by it. And then for him to come back and play really well, we were like, oh, I guess we'll zip it and recommend that you drop the players that he's taking ice time from. And then here we are a literal week later, right? So,
it's crazy.
Owen Power scores in consecutive games for his first and second goals of the year.
Yeah, man.
Shot totals are ramping up for him each month this season. If he can improve on the 2.8 shooting percentage, there may be some real viability coming for the young Wolverine. Jason Chen of RotoWire and Yahoo Fantasy noted in his recent article, he's one to acquire for the back half of the season. In 5-on-5 play, I don't have the stat in front of me, but one of the upper defensemen in shot totals in the league. So considering that it's that bad of a shooting percentage, like there may be really something there to go with. And he really looked fantastic against Dallas. Like Dallas was really putting the screws to them defensively, and they continued to stand up against a barrage of offense. So it was surely noteworthy and completely completely expected for Dallas to lose in overtime for their eighth overtime loss. I never would have guessed that it would have been Owen Power to score that goal. back to the injury bug, Tarasenko and Krug are off of IR for the Blues for 10 and 13 games missed, respectively. However, Buchnevich is on IR now with a concerning surgery related to an infection in his ankle at the site of a contusion occurring earlier this season. So Buchnevich will be reevaluated after the break. And if I had to guess, and again, I also am not yet a doctor, continually reevaluated after that, right? Like a contusion in the ankle is bad, right? Like one whack to the ankle and you're having to sit the rest of the period slash game slash week out. And for there to be an infection in it, that's especially concerning for me. Are you alarmed enough by this to sell on a point per game player through 38 games?
That's tough. I'm going to have to wait and see what the prognosis is here. I think he's a guy you probably want for the playoffs, even if he doesn't play the rest of the year or the rest of the fantasy regular season, whatever you want to call that. So, because he's a guy that has come back from injuries multiple times this year and has just kind of like jumped back into it, and he's been fine. But yeah, that is certainly concerning. It certainly gives me pause. He's a guy that I do have, I think, in one league, maybe two. That's something I'll be thinking about for sure.
Jake DeBrusk will begin skating soon if it hasn't happened already. There were rumors that it would happen Monday, but not confirmations. Not likely to return until after the All-Star game on February 11th. I think we'll touch more on them as a team in the mailbag, but worth noting. And then before we head into goalies, Thatcher Demko is lined up to return after the break, February 6th, ooh, against New Jersey. If he returns, it will have been almost a full month longer than the original six-week timetable. Doing that a little bit of digging into this because a lot of people are wondering, you know, Demko has hit the waiver wire in a lot of places and is available. The Canucks' rest of season strength of schedule will completely flip from the first half. They'll go from one of the hardest schedules to the easiest schedule. So possibly a buy very low, ?
Yeah. Did you hear Bruce Boudreau in one of his last press conferences addressing that? About how they have an easy schedule.
I listened to a lot of that stuff regarding Boudreau, but I didn't hear that clip. What did he say?
It was a bit of a parting shot there about how it'll be pretty easy for the rest of the season for them to look good with a new coach staff.
Okay.
So
yeah. As an aside, I've always hated Tockett. Like, I really hate Tockett. I always have.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'm kind of glad I don't have to watch him on that TNT panel anymore. But other than that, it sucks for Canucks fans that they have to listen to him game after game.
Yeah, I have no firm opinions on Tockett, to be honest. But I support
friggin' terrible coach record wise. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, but terrible. the teams he's coached have been like really bad teams, like Arizona Coyotes. I mean, of any era, and then the Tampa Bay Lightning when they were bad, like when it was. Steven Stamkos had just been drafted. Like, they were not a very good team. And I don't know how much that was him as a coach. But I don't know. I mean, the jury's still out. In my opinion, the jury's out on him, but I mean, I understand people being upset.
If there were a talent level to throw him into to rectify that, the Canucks would be it too, especially like we and Boudreau have noted, like, especially against this slate, right? Like, if he can turn it around, he's going to get a lot of credit for it.
In terms of Thatcher Demko, I think I'm definitely interested just because of the ease of schedule the rest of the year, because Vancouver's bad defensively, and he'll almost definitely be making a ton of saves. He'll get a lot of shot volume. He'll probably get most of the starts. And then I think this amount of time off for him, just because of how he played at the start of the year, I think that probably gives him lots of time to kind of like reset mentally, even though he is rehabbing and whatnot. I think the mental game for goaltenders is huge. So I think this time off has the potential. I don't want to say it's definitely going to help, but like Thatcher Demko is, I mean, has historically been, at least the last couple of years, been one of the best goalies in the NHL. So you don't just lose that, right? It doesn't completely disappear. I mean, maybe it does. Like, goalies are weird, but I mean, I think he has the ability to win games for his team still. I think he's still that guy. But I think this amount of time off and away from the game, just rehabbing, I imagine it has the potential to reset him mentally. Like I said before, I'm just kind of repeating myself at this point, but I'm interested in a buy low. I don't think it would take much to get him. And definitely if he's on your waiver wire, I would probably pick him up and stash him right now. Let's do, speaking of goalies, let's do a zero G check-in. So, I looked at Kakupful points, and over the last 14 days, the number one goalie in the NHL is Sam Montembeau from the Montreal Canadiens, 19% rostered. He's still red hot. He's getting tons of starts with Jake Allen out. I don't think that it's likely to last in terms of, I mean, he'll still start. I don't think it's likely that he'll keep winning and playing so amazing, because the Canadiens don't have anyone to play for them right now. Yeah. Everyone's on the IR.
It's all about
Cole Caulfield is done for the year, who was, I mean, he had a large percentage of their offense. So I just think, he's been playing very, very well though, despite that. So I don't know. I don't know if he's a guy that you necessarily want to pick up. He's super available, 19% rostered. So if you want to give him a shot, go for it. But I don't know that I'm really high on anyone from Montreal right now, regardless of how they're playing. So proceed with caution, I guess, is what I would say. And then Ilya Samsonov, I guess he wants us to call him Samsonov. He was called Samsonov last year. Now he's called Samsonov.
Samsonov, I was way off.
He started. Yeah, I know. It's like remember Sergei Samsonov? Like that's how, when I was growing up, that's how I remember Samsonov being, that last name being pronounced. But then I don't know. This guy kind of threw me a loop a little bit. He started, actually, I put three straight in my notes. It's actually four straight now. He started four straight games for the Leafs and he's looked fantastic. He has an amazing home record. I actually am not sure that he has lost in regulation at home. I could be wrong about that. It may be one regulation loss. I'd have to double check that, but he has a really, really good home record. And I think the Leafs have been playing some games at home lately and he's been playing really well. They actually just won again tonight against the Rangers. They came back and won in overtime. I imagine Matt Murray, at least the rumor around Leafs media, and Leafs Twitter, is that Murray will probably get a start on the road. I kind of hope so for Murray's sake that he gets that confidence back. But I think people that picked up Samsonov off waivers when people were dropping him when Murray was getting a boatload of starts are probably pretty happy right now, because he got a volume starter on one of the best teams in the league. So that's pretty nice. He's not super available anymore. I just wanted to address that situation. Georgiev has started 3 of 4 for Colorado. So my comment about Pavel Francouz potentially stealing starts is, I mean, it's probably not going to happen. It seems like they're kind of back to rolling with Georgiev as the volume guy. Francouz not getting as much attention as I'd anticipated. Colorado's red hot though, so when he does play, I think you probably want him for a spot start. He's pretty ideal. He's somewhere around 40-45% rostered right now.
Colorado expecting to get all of their injured defensemen back after the All-Star break. Byron's been skating and not taking contact. Manson's supposed to come back directly after that, and McCarr's been a little bit day-to-day. But he's also expected to come back. He's supposed to play in the All-Star game and then come back after that just fine. So they're going to get even better.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting for Avs fans, that's for sure.
Woo.
For the Buffalo Sabres, this is an interesting situation. So since Eric Comrie has come back from injury and they sent UPL down to the minors, Comrie has played one game, and that was his first game back, and that was on January 10th. Did not play well. And then there have been 8 games for the Sabres since, and UPL has started 6 of them. And he's been playing very well. He went 4-2 in those 6 starts. 4 of them were quality starts in terms of like over 900 save percentage. So he has been playing very well. And they seem to be riding him. It seems like they've kind of made a decision. And must be said, those other 2 starts in those 8 games, it was Craig Anderson. So
Anderson, really sure
what's going on there.
Was excellent against Dallas on Monday. Like the Buffalo attendees are giving me a headache, and not at all in the way you might expect. Like, I don't understand why they sent 6K down if he was just going to start 6 of 8 directly after that. Like, do they want to watch Comrie in person one time and then be like, okay, we messed up? Or was it?
It is.
Were they like playing head games with UPL? I don't understand the reasoning behind that at all.
It is a very weird situation that they would make a decision that quickly on Comrie. But I mean, it sounds like they're just rolling with 3 goalies right now. I haven't heard anything about Comrie being sent down. I could be wrong about that. So it could be they just needed to move some guys around in order to have the 3 goalies up. But yeah. Anyways, UPL, it seems like you could probably stream and hold him at this point because Buffalo is red hot and he's getting a ton of starts. Jack Campbell has been starting a little bit. I put Jack Campbell with a question mark here because I didn't know at the time whether or not he was going to get the start tonight. Stuart Skinner is getting the start. So, I think if we saw Campbell starting tonight, that would indicate that they're kind of leaning towards Campbell again. But that isn't happening. So we'll see. I still think that net is going to be shared a little bit more than it was before Skinner went off to spend time with his wife and his new baby. I think Campbell is an option, and he is very available right now. So available on a lot of free agency lists. Carl Vemelka is still an option, 45% rostered, still making tons of saves, even though Arizona isn't scoring and giving him any goal support. So Vemelka definitely still an option there. Looks like have they been starting Ingram more? Is that what you're saying here?
It's basically been 1-1 recently with Ingram getting every other start. And I feel like the value of Vemelka is that he was getting a bulk of the starts and taking a ton of shots, right? And if he's only getting half of those, then does that kill the value of both of them? Are you just willing to stream whichever Arizona goaltender it is if your league format like is beneficial for volume, or are you just like you just throwing both of them out with the bathwater?
They're finally realizing that they will increase their chances in the Bedard sweepstakes if they don't play Vemelka every game.
Right? Ingram, get out there.
Exactly.
You're doing well again. Get out there.
Dan Vladar has started.
Get pulled in a shootout. In a shutout. Get over here. What are you doing?
And then Dan Vladar, who's 25% rostered, he's actually started 4 of the last 6 games for Calgary. So that's an interesting situation. Numbers aren't particularly strong, but they have won those 4 games. So sometimes when you're winning games, even if the goalie isn't playing particularly well and you've got a bit of a goaltending controversy, the coach sometimes is like, you know what, let's just roll with the guy that we're feeling good with, despite what his individual numbers are. So definitely a situation to watch there. That goaltending situation has been weird all year. the Calgary situation in general has just been bad this season. But that is it for the Zero G check-in. So let's move on to the mailbag. So our first question is from Slevel, and they're asking to rank Perron, Suzuki, Sagan, Morgan Riley, Jonathan Huberdeau, Patrick Kane, Markstrom, or Vemelka in kickoffle scoring. So in terms of kickoffle scoring, goals are worth 4.5 points, assists are worth 3, shots on goal are 0.5, blocks are 0.5, hits are 0.25, shorthanded points are worth 1 point. And then for goalies, wins are worth 2, saves are worth 0.3, goals against are a negative 1.5, shutouts are 2 points. And then the playoffs are in weeks 22 to 24. So in terms of, this is hard. These guys are all around the same tier in terms of how they've done this year so far. They're all underperforming. They're all similar point levels, but in terms of, this is a little bit arbitrary, but I'm going to just kind of go with my gut here. I think Patrick Kane is probably your number one option out of this list. I think he's starting to heat up again. And I think there's a good chance that he is not a Blackhawk anymore this year, which I think will probably rejuvenate him, because he'll be playing with players probably like the, you know what I mean? Like NHL players. Yeah. So, I would probably go with Kane as my number one. My number two is probably Sagan, just because I like Dallas's situation. He's getting a shot on line one right now, and even with Roope Hintz back, he's been playing with Robertson and Pavelski. So I really like that for him. He has been playing a little bit better in general lately, it seems. I don't know. You'd be a better judge of that. But
yeah, I think the situation with Hintz out really, really behooved him, and it really just put him on a line literally with another tier of talent, right? But since Hintz has come back, he's on power play too. I don't expect the lines to stay the way they are. Like, Hintz took one shot in that game against Buffalo and coming back and was kind of loose with the puck, like turned it over quite a bit in offensive situations. It was a little bit disappointing from Roope, but not entirely unexpected. I completely agree that Sagan is probably in the upper two picks in this list, especially considering the scoring format, right? Like, you don't really need him to hit. And you are certainly more interested in goal scoring than assists. And from this list, like, you want it to be Huberdeau, right? But it just hasn't been all season long. Yep. And we kind of assume that Kane will get traded. But if it doesn't happen, and if it does happen, there's a pretty strong track record of fantasy players not necessarily having a better second term on the second team. So I'm definitely in line with your rankings thus far, for sure. I think after the first two, it's pretty much a wash, but I would go with Huberdeau and then Sagan. I don't really trust Perron. Things have gone from bad to worse in Montreal, and you have to assume Suzuki is going to dive alongside the rest of them. You really can't put Morgan Riley alongside any of these guys, especially considering that you're in a heavy goal format and he's not a lock to get power play time, right? So for me, however,
it is worth noting he is getting power play time right now. He is back on PP1. So
congrats.
So that's that is an interesting development that's just happened the last couple of games. So I think I would probably rank him. Oh man. So yeah, I'd probably go Kane, Sagan, maybe Perron at that point, because I think, I don't know.
There's certainly a chance he's a goal scorer. That he can be the goal scorer on the power play. So I have to flip this on its head, because the wording of the question was a little bit tough, so I made it easier to read. But the point of the question was to rank them worst to first. So I wanted to hear you from the top
before I told you
The real basis of the question. And I'm going to go worst to first: Suzuki, Riley, Perron, Sagan. I think Huberdeau and Kane are a split at the top for me, and I figure we just leave the goalies to a separate category.
Yeah, I'm pretty in line with that. I think Suzuki definitely had the is the worst in the worst situation. He's a guy that has played way above, has scored at way above the way that he's played. He hasn't really generated a ton, but he was riding high percentages, and now he doesn't have Caulfield.
He's got no one. Yeah,
so that's really sketchy. And playing on a power play that was frankly even bad with Caulfield, but Caulfield really carried it when they were putting the puck in the net. So Suzuki, I think, is going to have a tough time the rest of the year. Probably Riley, then Perron. Yeah, I think I'm pretty in line with what you're saying. I think Sagan and Huberdeau are probably a wash. I think Sagan probably scores a little bit more than Huberdeau. So that's why I think I'd rank him a little bit higher.
And Huberdeau so more likely to get assists. Yeah. So as far as goalies go, wins 2 points, saves 0.3, goals against negative 1.5. I think they're the most important factors here. And shutouts too. I don't feel like either one of these teams are gonna throw a bunch of shutouts. But is it Markstrom or Vemelka for you? And of note in schedules, total off day games for the year: Arizona 38, Calgary 33. So both on the high end. And total back-to-back games in the schedule: Arizona 12 and Calgary 10, both on the low end, right? So both pretty beneficial for them just being standalone, provided Vladar doesn't take over for Markstrom. But I mean, it's pretty clear to me that Vemelka is the worst option here, right? Like even if you're in talking about a tandem with Vladar and Markstrom, which I don't think will happen, I think they'll find a hot hand and ride it one way or the other.
Yeah. And it'll likely be Markstrom.
Vemelka has like it's to in be their the best interest, right?
It's in their best interests for it to be Markstrom that they ride with. So I think they'll, like, no matter how Calgary does, I think he'll end up being their starter. So I think with Calgary competing for a playoff spot, Arizona's not competing for a playoff spot. I think that their game will probably be elevated. Whereas Arizona, I mean, like you said, they're trying to get Ingram more starts, which really reduces Vemelka's value. Like the big thing about him is makes a ton of saves because Arizona has terrible defense and he plays a ton. And if he's not playing a ton, then his value goes down considerably. So yeah, I think Markstrom I'd still put him above Vemelka despite the way that things have gone up until this point. All right, let's move on to a question from Reese's Pieces. What are your thoughts on trading star players that may get rested down the stretch or have meaningless games? Boston, for instance, is running away with the division and has little need to play guys like Marchand and Bergeron when it's not going to change their playoff position. So my thoughts on this are I don't anticipate this happening a lot because it's hockey. Mm-hmm. hockey players are very proud and there's not as much load management as other sports.
I think it was actually Marchand that like scoffed at the idea earlier this season of load management.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was literally him that like out loud scoffed at the phrase like load management. Like I think you're absolutely right.
Exactly.
That's more of a thing for you to consider in fantasy football. In fantasy hockey, I don't really ascribe to that like idea of what's going to happen. Also, that's a solid 25-30 games from now, and you know, like we've seen in the last week of hockey, like things are unexpected and will happen. Like even with Boston, you can't count your chickens before they hatch, you know what I mean? Like it's got to flesh out, and I don't want to trade star players on the possibility that they might be too good. if that's the case, then hopefully you built up such an advantage over that term that you were able to get the best streaming level players come that time period, and you're leaning on them knowing that the time on ice for players like Marchand and Bergeron are going to be a couple of minutes less. And I think at best, they're stronger, faster, more rested on the ice in their limited time, you know, rather than just like benched, because you're not going to see that.
Yeah. I will say, last year we did see like the last couple games of the season, that teams that were comfortably in a playoff spot, that couldn't move, up or down in terms of their positioning, did rest some guys for the last one or two games. I don't think we'll see that really before that. So if your playoffs go right till the end, maybe there's an argument for that. But my thought on that is don't play in leagues like that.
and just, we'll get to that here in a question or two. Yeah, for sure.
Nylander enthusiast asks, my question is William Nylander.
Okay. I want to do this in unison. Our answer is yes.
Oh, you didn't do it. That's terrible.
We're gonna have to We're gonna edit and dub it so we say it together.
We tried. You know how hard it is to say something in unison over over a stream when you're in two different places? It's so hard.
We're not gonna try it again. Don't worry, we're not gonna try again.
Like, have you ever heard like during the pandemic there were like bands that tried to play together from their houses? And do like live performances, and it was a complete disaster. Like, I don't know how your internet's got to be so good, and like, I don't know. And even with that, like, there's still gonna be lag here and there on the stream. Anyways, I digress. Second question. So this is another question from Nylander enthusiast.
You're welcome,
back, Nylander, by the way. I actually thought last week it's been a while since we've heard from Nylander enthusiasts. Now that we're halfway through the season, what changes to your current league settings or rules would you like to see added in? Or what rules or settings that are in your fantasy league do you think would benefit other leagues to introduce? What do you think, buddy?
So I am in the absolute minority here. I really want it to be a virtually ubiquitous thing in fantasy hockey that plus minus is a category that is accounted for in your category leagues. I think it is truly a useful thing in keeping teams above that base level where it's like, okay, this player is really good at one thing and they play on an awful team, but they get me power play points, right? Like, it keeps players from like Kalen Addison and Clayton Keller being upper echelon players because of their plus minus. And I love a stat that keeps stuff like that in check. And I know that I am alone in that. I know people hate that category and they call it bogus and a joke and completely random, but it is really indicative of like good teams versus bad teams. And I love it. I wish that it was in every league. As far as rules I would like to see kicked, as you mentioned before, I don't want to be in any league that is playing all the way up until the very end of the season for the exact reason you described.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, counterpoint to plus minus, I don't like plus minus, and primarily because it's a team stat, essentially. Like, you can have a guy that, I mean, I just feel like it washes the player pool in fantasy hockey. Like it makes a lot more players irrelevant that would be relevant.
That's why I like it.
Plus minus wasn't a thing. But yeah. I mean, yeah, that's just a difference of opinion, I guess. Like, yeah, I mean, it's just two different ways of looking at it. I kind of like the idea that there's a lot of streamers available and that you can pick and choose. And I don't know. Whereas... Yeah, anyways, I won't go on too much about that. I think in terms of playoff schedule, yeah, don't play in leagues where it goes all the way to the end. It's just never fun when half of your guys are rested for the last few days of.
Before we move on from this question, I did want to get your opinion on this. How do you feel about unlimited IR spots?
Unlimited? Like,
when we went through the bubble season and all of these IR plus leagues kind of blossomed, right? I absolutely hate losing a player because they are injured for like a limited term, but just long enough right. that you can't afford to keep them on your roster. I feel like if, and again, this is another part of me loving plus minus. Like I like to build a roster and then try and carry that roster throughout the season rather than attack streaming in 1 to 2 to 3 positions. Right. So if the IR opened all the way up, you would be able to keep all of those players and then cull as necessary. But as it is, there's a lot of leagues out there where there's only a few spots.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all, to be honest. I kind of feel like I build my teams in a similar manner. I think I don't know if you're referring to our Dynasty League, where I feel like there's a lot of settings in that league that we've talked about this on the podcast before, where like I never started a Dynasty League before. I've barely played it in Dynasty Leagues in the past. So there's a lot of things that I think need fixing in terms of settings in this league. Fantrax is also like, it's so intricate, so extensive that like, even when you think you've got everything figured out, you probably don't, especially if you don't have a ton of experience as commissioner.
I have to say, in our Dynasty League, I am fully in a tank hard for Bedard mode. So if you are in our Dynasty League, and if you're not, please get on the wait list for it. If you are in it, please make me offers with your draft picks, because I am in full sell mode. And like you said, there are only 3 IR spots and I've got 3 important players in them. So please send me offers for minor players. Like I have one Dynasty League where I am in win now mode and I'm in the top third of the league and doing well. And our Dynasty League is the exact opposite. And I am so screwed for this season. You are destroying me in our matchup thus far this week. So I am in full sell mode. Please send me all of the trade offers.
Hey man, including you send me trade offers, because I'm in second place. Hit me up. Hit me up. I'm open for business. Okay, the next question is from E. Jonesman. Whatever happened to Eric Gustafson? So, Binksy, what happened to Eric Gustafson?
Well, I feel like this is
what's going on here?
In reference to since John Carlson went down and he was on well over almost 2 point per game pace through like 8 games during that stretch before and after he got hurt. Right. And now that's kind of come crashing back to earth in the last 14 games for Eric, 10 points, shot 9.4 on 32 shots over that period. Average time on ice, 21:39. Right. So not terrible, honestly, especially for a fill-in player that you likely got off the wire. Like, if you were, and it sounds like you are, E. Jonesman, if you were expecting that stretch to go through the rest of the season just because Carlson was hurt, it's not going to happen. That's not the player he is.
Yeah.
He's super unlikely to play a full slate during that time anyway, not something he normally does. He's very much an ice eater that doesn't give you a lot of peripherals, shoots a bit, and scores here and there generally on assists, right? Like that stretch was an aberration, and if you're expecting that to come back, it's not really going to happen. And just like we talked about a little bit off air, the Capitals have come back down to earth after that peak that they had for roughly 15-18 games. Ovechkin is kind of limping towards the All-Star break. Wilson is day-to-day with an injury. The rest of the team has not been especially good. Carlson is out for who knows how long after taking a literal puck to the face. Like, it's not a lot of good stuff going on right there. And if you're banking on Gustafson, you just shouldn't be. So what happened to him? He's right back to who he is. That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really have anything to add to that, honestly. Googs has messaged us and told us that it is Googs, not Googs. It's Googs. So they're asking, is Eichel slumping and due for a big bounce back, or do you think he's injured again? He had a lot of time off, so I assume the injury is lingering. I think he's probably slumping. He's not generating a ton, but there was a game against Arizona recently where he had 10 shot attempts, 5 shots. I think it's more about who he's playing with right now, because Vegas has so many injuries. He's playing with, I believe, Paul Cotter and Nicholas Waugh. So that's not super ideal at all. And their power play one is pretty, a lot of their main guys are just are out. So I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be fine. He did get called out by Bruce Cassidy this week in a press conference for not producing as much as he should be and not being there when they're relying on him to produce at a level. I mean, they're paying him $10 million. So you expect him to produce no matter who he's playing with, but I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be okay. I don't anticipate there being an injury there.
Yeah. I don't know that it's an injury. The most concerning thing about the recent stretch in this slump is that he's just not shooting a ton, right? It's been few and far between where he's putting a bunch of shots together. With that kind of franchise level player, that kind of contract, especially with the injuries and the healthy players like Stevenson and Marchessault, so on that team not playing as well as they did earlier this year, you really expect Eichel to do more. It sounds like Cassidy expects him to do more. I don't, in recent memory, remember Eichel responding well to criticism like that in the media. So who knows how that will go. I don't suspect that it's injury that's keeping him hurt or rather slumping, but it's certainly possible. The indicator that I remember Nate laying on was that the hits and blocks category will tell you the score, whether people are still hurt. If they're still stepping in front of pucks, if they're still throwing the body, then they're probably not hurting too bad. And he's still giving you those things game to game. He's still hitting, he's still blocking. So it doesn't seem like injury. I think you're right. I think it's just Vegas is having a tough time right now in a variety of ways.
Yeah. Nate asks, what are you and Binksy's closest degrees of separation to an NHL player? Looking for that next shout out for the pod. I don't know about you, Binksy. I don't have a lot of connections. I have very fringe connections, and I wouldn't even consider them connections. When I was a teenager, I worked with Nick Cousins' brother at Wendy's.
The football player?
He probably wouldn't even... Nick Cousins.
No, that's
so
sorry.
Okay. He's for Florida. Sorry. He's like a fourth liner on the Panthers.
I got you.
So he was there. He was from Belleville. He's a year younger than me, but I worked with his older brother at Wendy's. He probably doesn't even remember who I am, to be honest. So that's not really a real connection there. When I was even younger, I used to play house league ball hockey. And I numerous times played against Andrew Shaw. I know he's a retired NHL player now, but he was in the same league as me. And I mean, obviously dominated that league. Like, he was known for being awesome. Him and his brother Jason just crushed. But there was one night, my parents have a newspaper clipping. They kept newspaper clippings because they would have all the scores from house league ball hockey and then all the scorers. And one night I had 3 points. I don't know how, because I was not very good. One night I had 3 points and Andrew had 2. So that's my finest ball hockey moment. Was I outscored Andrew Shaw one night in house league ball hockey. We've never had a conversation though in my life, so no, there's not really any connection there, to be honest.
I've got one connection to a former NHL player, distant relative who actually was from a different part of Canada and pronounced our last name differently. He was, and he's passed now, he's old. He was a stand-up goalie, no mask goalie for the Penguins. His name, Les Binkley. He had a Y on the end of his name. It's actually how you pronounce my name, wow. but we don't bother because if we tell people it pronounced that way, then they put a Y on it. So we all gave up a long time ago. But yeah, somewhere funny. I've got, I think it's an OPG card of him in one of those like old school blue and white Penguins jerseys. But he has since passed, so I don't think he's coming on the pod. As far as other references, I once shook Claude Lemieux's hand, and nice. I surprised Pat Verbeek that I knew who he was, and that was it. That's it. I'm of no help.
Crazy. One time I ran into Sheldon Keefe. We crossed paths on the GO train in when I was going to school in Toronto, and this was when he was coaching the Marlies, so no one knew who he was. So it wasn't like he was getting mobbed or like recognized or anything. And we kind of like made eye contact and then like nodded at each other. That's about it.
Definitely catch him.
Sorry, Nate, we're not pulling in any other players here. We're going to have to rely on the audience. Skateful Dead asks, as a Meyer manager, I'm curious what happens with his production on a better team like the rumored Devils or Sabres. Any wild speculations? My thought is, and you kind of touched on this before when we were talking about Patrick Kane, Binksy, but I think Meyer's production may actually decrease. And that's typical of people acclimatizing themselves to new teams. I think a big part of Meyer's production and why it's been so wild the last little while or the last year or two has been he gets played so much in San mm-hmm. Jose because he's the only guy that can generate offense. So I think he would be a great addition. I mean, I'd like him on the Leafs, to be honest. I think that there's been the rumors haven't been as hot in terms of the Leafs, but I've heard some murmurs out there. Hasn't been as hot as I guess the Devils or Sabres, like you've been hearing, but I think he'll be a good addition, but I wouldn't count on his production to be like to really increase a ton. And in fact, it may decrease.
My guess is that the only stat that you see goes up for him is total points, like point pace, and the entirety sure. of the rest of his score sheet goes down. He'll go to a better team and have the puck more and hit less and block less.
Yeah.
He'll, you know, slot into a different position, not be the star of the show on the power play. He'll get less power play points. You'll probably see assists and total points, the pace kick up a little bit. And that will be like the silver lining to what generally happens when players move and they just don't have as successful a second half when they move to the second team. That's just the general rule, as disappointing as that is for storylines and fantasy hockey in general.
Definitely. Zebra Dan, another convincing win for you last week and you're pulling towards the top. What's your opinion on Dynasty Leagues? I took over teams in two established leagues this year and still have no idea how to properly value players. So I feel like I've lost every trade so far. Any tips on how to value players and picks? This is a good question. I don't think I am going to be able to answer this because, to be honest, I kind of have the same feeling right now. I don't really know how to value players versus picks in dynasty leagues because I don't have a ton of experience. So the one that I'm in and the one that I'm the commissioner of, I actually have been having a really hard time with trade offers and like knowing how to value certain players versus picks and rentals versus young players and stuff like that. So I just think, I don't know, Binksy, do you have some insight on this? You have a little more dynasty experience.
It's a little, you know, it's natural with it being a dynasty format, but it's a little more akin to actual NHL, like roster management, right? So if you are what you deem to be a win now and win soon team, then sell your picks, sell your players that don't, your minor league players that don't crack your roster on a regular basis, that don't have that 100 game area where you can basically use them as streaming from your minor levels, and really dive into win now. right? Like, your picks don't do you any good if you're a team that's going to win right now. If you've got players in their middle 30s, their late 30s, if you've got players that are going to be moving to different situations contract wise really soon, right? Like, you have to fully commit to one or the other. And that's what I was talking about with our Dynasty Listener League. Like, my team is so bad, and the upper level players that I have on the team are like long-term hurt, right? And as I've gone further and further down the lineup or in the standings, it is super apparent that my team is not in a win now fashion, and it's time to sell, right? Like, you really have to truthfully evaluate your team. And unfortunately, if you fall in the middle, right? If you're a probably going to miss the playoffs team, or if you're a probably going to make the playoffs, but just squeak in and more than likely not be a viable team to win this year or next year, if injuries or if, you know, matchups, if you've just got a ridiculous points against slate for your team this year, then you have to be really honest with yourself and buy or sell. Like, figure out which one your roster is and fully commit to it, because there is nothing worse than being the first team out of the playoffs in a dynasty format, or being the last team in and the first team to go out in the playoffs, right? If you're in that tier, pick a direction and go for it fully, because draft picks don't help you in win now mode, and your best player doesn't help you at all if you're not going in to even sniff the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. The Mark Skinner, this will be our last question, asks,
Marky,
if you were to drop someone in a points only redraft league between Keller and friend of the show, Vinny Tro, who would you drop? Thoughts on Hartman as well. Is he a hold or a stream? So,
Marky, are you testing us right now? Are you testing?
This is hard. This is mean. I feel like this is mean.
I choose Trocheck over anyone right now. Literally anyone I choose.
Yeah, that's right. I'd probably drop Trocheck. If it's a points only, Clayton Keller, similar to the Timo Meier situation in San Jose. Gets played a ton, gets relied on to score. He's gonna do it. Trocheck isn't getting amazing deployment right now, so he doesn't have the line mates to play with currently. So I think I'm dropping Trocheck over Keller. As much as it pains me to say, I actually bet on him to score against the Leafs tonight. Just because of the juices have been flowing with Vinny Trocheck, there's been so many good vibes.
That Young Guns line is going crazy in that game right now. The only thing that really tips the scales for me between these two players is the fact that Arizona has the most off nights, right? Like, they're just a team that you can rely on to roster in an off night, and they're playing the same position. And it's more likely, with New York being a premium market, that they're going to be playing on your heaviest nights across the season. And at that level of your roster, Trocheck is going to be the guy that is probably the odd man out when you're like, who do I get into my utility slots? Who do I get into my center slots? So, man, like, I far would rather have Trocheck on my team. I would far rather have Trocheck in a vacuum, but in fantasy hockey and in this season only in a points format, Keller is the guy to go with. And if you guys tell Trocheck that I said that, I will completely deny it, because he's not listening at 118 in our episode at all. As far as Hartman, I've been talking about him as an advantageous ad for a few weeks now. He's absolutely a hold for me. That is a fantastic power play. He is going to find his way to the top line work. He's going to find his way to that top line power play. I think you're well in line if you want to drop him and come back to him. I don't think anybody's going to knock you for that. But in most cases, he would be a hold for me.
Yeah, I think he's still a stream, just because I do have concerns with deployment in Minnesota. I think the only circumstance where he's a hold is if he's centering the top line again. Or on.
I just don't see how that doesn't happen eventually.
I agree. I 100% agree. I think it should happen, and I think it probably will at some point. But until it does, I mean, I would have thought that it would have happened already. So yeah, the fact that it hasn't happened already makes me wonder if there's still like a nice long leash for Sam Steele up there. So I think,
unbelievable.
I think Sam until Steele. This point, yeah, I think at this point he's probably still a streamer, but he's a solid streamer. So, but yeah, that's it. That's all we got for tonight. Check out the Apples and Genos Discord server. Shout outs to the band They're There for providing our music. Their Spotify link is in the episode description. Give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter. Binksy is at Binklemania. Nate is at Apples Genos. Blake is at Blake Creamer SE. And I'm at JustJoshin41. Please practice safe stats and happy streaming. Have a good one, folks.
Good night, world.